welcome everybody. I am Sarah Snell Cook. Before we get started with this episode of the Credit Union Connection, a quick note, this episode is sponsored by the Defense Credit Union Council. And today I'm speaking with Anthony Hernandez, President and CEO of the Defense Credit Union Council, about why military financial readiness is actually defense readiness. For example, he says, if the airman securing an oxygen bottle on an F-15, something he knows well about, is worried about feeding his baby at home because the government is shut down and isn't paying him, bad things are going to happen at 60,000 feet. We're also covering the interchange fight, moving from the federal legislative level to the states, the Clarity Act moving through the Senate now on stablecoin and crypto, which also the NCUA has issued its proposed regulation, housing affordability, and much, much more. Anthony also breaks down what happened at DCUC's CU Unplugged Unconference, where engineers stayed up overnight vibe coding and turned morning discussions into 85% solutions by the next day. That kind of speed is just incredible. So last DCUC did a brand survey on whether to change their name or not as their membership grows. Spoiler alert, they keep it. Let's connect with Anthony. Hello and welcome everyone. I'm Sarah Snell Cook, of course, your host here at the Credit Union Connection. I'm joined by Anthony Hernandez. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here again.
Absolutely happy to have you. And so you're obviously the CEO of the Defense Credit Union Council. Tell us a little bit about yourself and the organization.
Okay, well, I'm Tony Hernandez. I had a successful 25-year military career before joining DCUC, but I retired from the military about 10 years ago. So I've been in the credit union space for about a decade now. And it's been great. Learned a lot of things, met a lot of fantastic people, and built some really deep connections with a lot of leaders throughout the industry and leaders at all levels. And that's kind of encouraging to me, just to where I see the movement heading.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, future leaders. We'll talk about that later, because I definitely, that's a crucial point for the credit union movement as a whole. So how's it going? I know you guys just held CU Unplugged. You had your overseas conference. How are things going? How was all that?
They were great. I mean, the CU Unplugged event was very interesting. It was a different conference. It's called an unconference for a reason, because there is no agenda and there are no keynote speakers. It's credit union professionals, CEOs, people in charge of their digital strategies. And then it was a lot of tech providers that were there. What was interesting was watching the interplay between identifying a problem and people that could help fix it. And what struck me about CU Unplugged was they had some very smart engineers there. I mean, we call them 10X engineers. And I didn't know what the term was, but I do now. I went and looked it up. We did it in San Francisco at the Visa Market Center. It's pretty much their headquarters. And it was a beautiful facility, but pretty close to Silicon Valley. So you had a lot of these types of engineers that were there. And the thing that struck me is kind of odd, and I kind of like the idea. We're going to try to recreate that at our upcoming annual conference. Was most people go to dinner after you get done with your sessions and done meeting. So I went to dinner with folks. When I was coming back, a lot of these engineers were in the hotel lobby, right? And they had ordered pizza and sandwiches, and they had multiple laptops up, and they were vibe coding. They were taking all the ideas that we discussed that morning. They came back the next day with here's an 85% solution or a 90% solution.
What do you guys think?
And I'm going, that's pretty cool and that's pretty interactive. But I also learned that the other takeaway I got from the CU Unplugged is scale means one thing, but when you employ AI, you can take scale out of the equation. As long as you have someone that knows how to write prompts, and you can use ChatGPT to help, and then you can refine it. Any credit union could jump onto AI and maximize its use. And that was pretty democratic to me. And so you'll have a lot of early adopters and folks that are running to do that. But there's a lot of opportunity there for credit unions to jump on board and get ahead of this technology. So those are the two biggest takeaways I got from CU Unplugged. And we're going to continue to do that. We'll try to do it again in the November timeframe. back in San Francisco. And then I said, we're going to try to reincorporate that same vibe coding at our upcoming annual conference. And more to follow on that, but I'm pretty excited about it. And then we just got back from our overseas conference. It was held in the Indo-Pacific region versus Europe this year. And that was the first time we've been to that region. And it was very interesting. I learned that Thailand is the United States' longest ally in the region, in all of Asia. That in 1833, that was kind of cool. That came from the U.S. ambassador's talk. And it was nice to have him open, the highest ranking official in the country, open up our conference. And then we had the Asian Confederation of Credit Unions there, and I learned that there's about 39,000 credit unions in Asia alone. That was pretty remarkable, given there's only 4,400 here in the United States. So that was kind of neat. And then we had a geopolitical speaker come up and lay out the reason why that region is important to a national security and our national economic policy, and why you see the shift out of Europe, military shift out of Europe, more into the Indo-Pacific region, and everything that's going on in Iran sort of highlights why that region's important. But it's pretty much all the shipping lanes and the first island chain of defense in case China gets out of control. And that was very fascinating. And then we had a futurist named Brett King, who spoke on the future of financial services and AI and stablecoin and post-quantum computing. That was very fascinating too. And I believe all of the attendees there got a lot out of the conference, in addition to all the cultural things that we did and learning a lot about Thailand's cultural heritage, a lot of their food, and just a lot of cool things. It was just a fantastic conference. So now we're back and just getting set for our annual conference coming up. So there'll be a lot of surprises there as well.
Yes. And so one of the things you mentioned, it was the digital assets. And right now, of course, the Clarity Act is moving its way through Washington red tape. And so who did I say that out loud?
Yeah, that's the truth, though.
The bill covers stablecoin and clarifying the oversight of all crypto. And I see stablecoin digital assets as particularly important to those serving overseas, I would imagine, correct?
Sure. Yeah. It's an easy way for them to make payments, and an easy way for them to, well, depending on which way the Clarity Act goes, save money, put money away. And that's where we get into different policy discussions, whether they're going to pay interest on deposits, right? Now you're getting to our business, right? And how that intersects. But no, Clarity is going on in the Senate right now, and I think the Republicans are about to release some of the language. I haven't seen it yet. I know my guys are on top of that, but there's lots, depending on when this podcast gets released, we might already be through that. But today is Monday, the 11th of May, and so today it's in the Senate, and lots of amendments are being looked at. And whether they can get across the finish line is a big question mark, right? And I think it's going to take the Treasury Secretary Bessent, on behalf of the president, kind of pushing that through, at least through the Republican caucus, and onto a vote. And then you're going to see the same thing in the House, like a House version and a Senate version. So we're just kind of waiting to see what happens with that, and then what comes out of this process, how that affects credit unions going forward. And like I said, when they start looking at the yields on deposits, or making deposits at all on digital currency, well now you create a whole new financial institution. So that's pretty big.
I mean, there's so many credit unions that are kind of holding off, and it's like, no, we got to be there now. Members are
Yeah,
there now.
you can't sit on the sidelines and watch this. That early adopters, I think, will win the biggest on this. And so, yeah, we're watching it pretty closely. And then it kind of dovetails with what I talked about at our CU Unplugged, and also at our overseas conference when we talked about stablecoin and where it's going as well.
Yeah, and apparently there are also attempts to add the interchange language again.
Oh yeah. In fact, well, there was an important ruling from the Seventh Circuit Court that kind of took sent the Illinois case back to the court there to take a look at. I think well, I don't think it's an impractical bill.
Right.
And the easy solution is just to turn off cards, but that has the most penalty because if you're traveling through Chicago O'Hare, now your cards won't work
Yeah.
theoretically, right? So that's not good. We're seeing the same thing in Colorado.
Yep.
And Colorado has an asset ceiling on it or floor on it. And how is that workable? And so it's just another way of introducing it and then slow rolling it on. I understand Massachusetts is looking at it. And I heard Delaware and New Jersey are looking at similar efforts as well. This is what kind of what we saw with a lot of federal legislation is that you're seeing it pop up in states now. Now you get into federal preemption or for the supremacy clause and whether that applies or not.
Right.
And
Yeah.
so, yeah, there's a lot of interesting things going on with respect to interchange and how that's worked. But DCUC's worked very closely with the Electronic Payments Coalition. We've been on the front lines of this issue, and both here in DC at the federal level on Capitol Hill, but we've written lots of letters at the state level, certainly in this Colorado case, both to the Senate and then now Governor Polis, just to voicing our concerns and our opposition to the provisions within that bill. And that's been an important part because a lot of military, whether they're a member of a Colorado credit union or not, we have a lot of military stationed in the state of Colorado. And that's a concern to us. A lot of retirees too. And so I'll be honest, it's bad legislation. It wasn't ill-informed, and it just needs to be turned over. I don't think there's a workable solution for it. And I'll do my Forrest Gump. That's all I have to say about that.
The second most quoted thing from that movie.
That's
Run,
right.
Forrest.
That's the way I feel. Run, Tony, run.
Run, Tony. Yeah, so the other thing that's come up is the housing legislation. They're working to the Road to Housing Act. I think it's passed the Senate, although I think it was a different name, but now the House Financial Service Committee is picking it up. One of the things, because obviously, we all have heard about the problem with affordability. So I was looking up the data on that. And the average home in the US is about $400,000, which makes the average mortgage with escrow, no PMI, 80% down, $2,500. And as a rule of thumb, historically, it's been 28 to 30% of your gross income should go toward housing. Well, the average median household income is 83,700 and about 62,000 for an individual. But that roughly means for a household that their mortgage should be around $2,200, yet it's more like $2,500. So that just really illustrated to me, like exactly with the numbers, how that is working. I imagine too, even with on-base housing and some subsidies for private housing, that's got to affect the members of the military in particular, the new entrants. They're making like less than $35,000.
It's a big problem, particularly like you said, for military as well. Housing on base isn't guaranteed, and it's not. It doesn't cover everybody. There is a percentage of the military that has to live on the economy. Having affordable housing is always a concern. Or when you move to a place like DC, where the average house is a little bit higher than the rest of the country. And sure, there's offsets for that or different rates, but it's still a concern. And you got to have a place to store your stuff safely and a place to sleep safely as well, and to cook and eat and all the stuff. So that's a big deal. It's not a I don't believe that's a universal solution. There's a lot of local zoning laws that could allow for more housing to be built, and that's not at the federal level to legislate some of that stuff. Environmental laws, and then just people that have businesses that are able to have business construction businesses and the supply to go out there and build these things. It's going to take time, though, to build the housing supply and then to lower it. And not an easy solution. I think the House and Senate have different versions of the Road Act. And so we'll advocate for military and the way that affects them, and then the lawmakers will have to decide what the right thing is. And then once we see the legislation, we'll say, well, that's good, and that part's not so good, and here's why.
Earlier, just this morning, again, May 11th. The post probably next week, but you all wrote a letter about the military financial readiness and how that is defense readiness as well. Can you explain a little more?
Yeah, with everything going on, and of course, you saw this play out during the not the DHS shutdown, well, with the Coast Guard for sure, because they were part of DHS, but back in October when we had the full government shutdown, and that was a long running one. If you're the guy that's securing the oxygen bottle on an F-15 jet, and you're worried that, hey, and the government's not paying me my money, and my wife's calling, and the baby needs food, and the electricity is about to get shut off, while you're something simple as making sure that oxygen bottle's secure, you want to take that out of the equation. You want to limit the amount of risk so that a pilot isn't taken off without complete oxygen, and then getting hypoxia at 60,000 feet, right? It's just not bad things happen, you know. Or the airman that's on a nuclear sub getting a message that things aren't going well at home. And so it does tie to mission reliability and all that. And it's just one thing you want to not have service members worry about. Credit unions, and I'm very proud of them, a lot of them have a lot of programs during government shutdowns, and it's usually either a skip pay program or guaranteed pay. It's pretty much a zero interest loan that automatically kicks in so that your paycheck is still there. They know when the government opens up, there'll be back pay and they can get the money back. That's always been a huge comfort, but it shouldn't be a backstop for Congress when they, well, we're going to take this political position, but the credit unions got our back on this. No, we got the service members back. We expect Congress to do their job, you know, and pass a budget. So that's what we've written Congress about. I know DoD has created their own financial readiness curriculum, which is nice, but what they've done is that they've excluded both military banks and defense credit unions from offering that. And the difference there is that you want kind of, and I can see it from a service member's point of view. Do you want to tell the guy that's command sponsored and may or may not tell your commander or your supervisor? Or you want to go to a trusted resource like a credit union or a bank where you can talk about it. Plus, that credit union or bank probably can see into your finances a little bit more than a person on base, and it can really have a tailor-made product. And so we're trying to work with the Pentagon on policy to allow us to have another advisory panel to advise them on how best to do this stuff. And credit unions are great. We have a lot of great resources on our web page and people there that can help. And I think that's a little bit a little more, you can gain a lot more trust with the service members, and you come up with better solutions, in my humble but accurate opinion.
You sound like my husband.
Right.
Oh my. Yeah. So efforts like that, though, are really what is keeping your membership growing, seeing you guys adding new Ukrainians all the time. You also performed a survey recently.
So as we've been growing and having great success in terms of advocacy and a lot of our results, and seeing our conferences grow and more people expressing an interest, when CUNA and NAFCU merged, I believe there was a void out there. We've seen it, we've heard about it, and we've listened to a lot of members express that. And so as DCUC has filled some of that gap, right, and filled that void, we thought it'd be wise to do a brand survey. And so we went out to several credit union members that were members of DCUC, some that were not members. We made sure we had some that were critics of DCUC and some that were big supporters. We went out to system partners and other folks that were inside the industry to kind of just ask some general questions. The results came back very, very positive. And we're going to brief our board on those. So I won't get into the specifics too much here until I brief the board. But what I can say is that it was very, very positive. I think the main thing, a question we want is, do we change our name or do we not? And so I will leak this here because by the time this podcast run, we'll either be briefing our board or we will have briefed our board or we'll be about to brief our board. There's a lot of value in keeping our name and keeping our brand. The question is, where do we go from here? And so that should be a huge relief to a lot of your listeners because a lot of people said, don't change DCUC. I mean, we got the red, white, and blue. We got defense. It's kind of what we do in terms of supporting military and veterans. And the industry needs a DCUC out there. Nobody else can do what we do for as long as we've been doing it. And I think one thing we learned is that there's a definite place for us in the industry, and that was very encouraging. The rest of the stuff will roll out over the summer and then 2027 as we look to bring on even more credit unions and other system partners as well. Plus, I'm working with folks like yourself, the Credit Union Connection and other folks interested in how do we partner with all kinds of people. And I like the word partner, but I also like the word collaboration. And I think you're going to see a lot more of that going forward because that also came out in our brand survey as well.
Well, and that's important to represent what you represent.
I used to always tell CUNA and NAFCU back when they were still separate entities is that DCUC can take any credit union issue and advocate for it or oppose something that's going to hurt the industry. And we can package it in a military and veteran wrapper. And a lot of times that sells better on Capitol Hill or within the executive branch. And it's not a, yeah, it's a credit union issue, but oh, wait a minute. Here's how it impacts military and veteran people. And that's just something special that we do. And that's why I think there's a strong need for a Defense Credit Union Council going forward. And I think, well, I know that that's what we're moving towards and more to follow on that. But that's a little teaser for everybody. But I still have to brief my board. But I will say this, I'm very excited about where we're headed.
Cool. Very cool. It's good to hear. And so, one last question for you before we get into final thoughts. A lot of what we've talked about, the DCUC leadership on the Hill, leadership with new and different conferences, collaborating, that kind of stuff. Would you talk a little bit? One of the things that I think could be a threat to credit unions is new leadership coming up. We don't have enough of us Gen Xers to replace the boomers who are retiring. And sometimes that's why smaller credit unions are merging away because they don't have a new leader to replace the one who's retiring. Talk a little bit about leadership in general for maybe young up and comers,
I hear that a lot of times that we don't have people, but we got all kinds of people in credit unions now, just looking for an opportunity. When I joined the military, I was only going to do 4 years and out, and then you cultivate your own leaders going forward. And yeah, I mean, I can see both sides of the argument. We don't have enough leaders, but have we given enough people the opportunity to lead? You
Yes.
know, and how do we develop those folks and quit? How do we quit judging whether a person's capable of leadership or not? Because we all started somewhere. So
Sure.
I'm a big fan of the CRASHR programs that the Cooperative Trust puts together through Filene. I'm a big fan of a lot of the young professionals programs that a lot of credit unions and a lot of leagues put out there. And I think there's raw talent out there, and you can find it. And you can cultivate it. We got to take care of our own. And maybe we're just not imaginative on how to bring that out. The CRASH program is one thing. And DCUC is looking at a partnership with Filene to further build the CRASH program. One thing I think we can do is just model that behavior. And as leaders, always look for an opportunity to mentor and not to, or coach or offer advice to people because they're out there looking for it. And if you go to any credit union, you can see it. If you go to a credit union, any credit union conference, and that isn't just a bunch of CEOs and their directors, there's a lot of other people there too that are they wouldn't be there if they didn't want to grow. And so how do you cultivate that? And just reach out and spend time with people. I've seen some fabulous CEOs do that. And they create a draw right? And then what happens is a lot of those young leaders want to go work for that guy because he gave them the time of day. And all
Yes.
they need to do is give them the time of day and listen, and people will amaze you. When I had airmen, right, one stripe and two stripe airmen, and you put them in charge of something, and then you just stand back and watch. 9 times out of 10, they're going to rise to the occasion and they will blow you away, blow your expectations away. Yeah, there's one or two that may or may not do anything. They won't hurt the organization, but they won't move it forward. But for the most part, even young 18 and 19 year olds will take leadership if you give them enough encouragement to do that. I love watching young captains getting ready for their first command as majors and watching that. It's just something to behold. And I go back to myself and how I ended up here. I don't know if a lot of people saw me as a leader as I was growing up, but here I am. Here you are. Here all your listeners are. That's why when I sit on stage, if you've ever been to DCUC conference and I'm doing a fireside chat with the US ambassador or the president of Poland who will be at our conference, I always like to ask people, what were you like in high school? Because that level sets everybody. We all went to high school, and if you really want to level set, you go back to middle school or junior high, right? Because we had no idea what we were going to become. We were all confused, and we all had dealing with peer pressure and puberty and all that other stuff that comes along with it. But when you look at the path each of us have taken and where we're at today, it's pretty amazing how a lot of us are actually here. And I think the same thing with our credit union professionals. If you take a look at them and just see the potential, then you can grow anything you want. You just got to find people that are willing to grow, and they're out there.
Awesome. Well, I'm going to take that as your final thoughts, if that's
That's
okay.
fine. No, that's kind of rolled all into one.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you so much for your time today.
You
Appreciate it,
bet.
Tony.
All right, Sarah.